This is KDNK. It is time for your local newscast for this Tuesday morning, February 7th. I'm Steve Cole. Republican Cory Gardner and Democrat Michael Bennett, U.S. senators who represent our state, worked together on five public lands bills that were introduced last week in Congress. KDNK station manager Gavin Dahl spoke to Senator Bennett's press secretary, Lori Cipriano, about each specific bill and the importance of bipartisanship at a time when Congress is engaged in high-profile fights over President Trump's cabinet picks.
Michael believes that our public lands define Colorado and help drive our outdoor recreation economy. And these bipartisan common sense measures will help preserve our pristine lands, protect wildlife habitat, and expand outdoor access for years to come. Senator Gardner shares those beliefs, and that's why the two worked together to get this done.
So it looks like there are really five bills that Senator Gardner and Senator Bennett have worked on together. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so will you give us just a quick rundown of those?
Sure. Let's see. The Wedge Act would aid the Forest Service in acquiring several parcels of land near Rocky Mountain National Park. It would help protect critical wildlife habitat and Colorado River headwaters. It will also help preserve a spectacular and highly visible landscape in the area, commonly referred to as the Wedge. Then there is the Bolt Ditch Access and Use Act, which would authorize special use of the Bolt Ditch water diversion within the Holy Cross Wilderness Area. That would allow Minturn to use its existing water right to fill Bolt's Lake, which would solve a problem created in 1980 when Congress designated the Holy Cross Wilderness Area but inadvertently left Bolt Ditch off of the list of existing water facilities. The Florissant Fossil Beds National Monument legislation will allow for better wildfire protection and additional wildlife habitat. A private landowner actually offered to donate 280 acres of land near Florissant Fossil Beds Monument, but due to current law, the land donation was not allowed. So this legislation would change that and allow the landowner to donate private land to Florissant Fossil Beds National Monument. The Colorado Land Exchange Act is a federal land exchange where the Forest Service would acquire pristine land in the Pike National Forest, which would allow more outdoor recreation near Pike's Peak. The Elkhorn Ranch and White River National Forest Conveyance Act would correct a discrepancy from conflicting land surveys and require the Forest Service to convey acreage to private ownership. Now, this acreage is rightfully private property, according to the Forest Service's own conclusion and recommendation. This legislation allows for the resolution between the Forest Service and the private landowner. And I just wanted to also add one more thing. We are grateful to the communities who came together in a common sense way to help us craft these bills.
Lori Cipriano, press secretary for Senator Michael Bennett, thanks for taking a couple minutes with us. So it seems like public lands are an opportunity for Senator Bennett and Senator Gardner to work together. That seems like a good thing.
It does seem like a good thing, and we're hoping it's an example for the rest of Congress.
Lori Cipriano, thanks so much for speaking to KDNK.
No problem. Thank you.
And if you missed Gavin's interview with Congressman Scott Tipton last week, check it out on our website at kdnk.org. You can send your comments and questions for each of our members of Congress to news@kdnk.org. Local award-winning photographer Pete McBride and author Kevin Fidarko set out in September 2015 to hike the Grand Canyon on assignment for National Geographic. KDNK's Amy Haddon-Marsh recently spoke to both of them and put together this audio collage about one particular photograph made by McBride. Kevin Fidarko speaks first.
This is a photograph which Pete McBride took. It's one of the most extraordinary photographs that I've ever seen in my life. And Pete actually says it's not really a photograph. What he calls it is a photo composite. He bends over backwards to be transparent about how he created this image, which he did by spending more than 8 hours planting himself inside the section of the canyon known as Helicopter Alley and taking time-lapse photographs every 20 or 30 seconds.
I did one on Easter Sunday, and then I went again in the middle of summer, sat down there. It was 115 degrees in the shade, and I took a picture every time a helicopter flew through my frame. And then I made a composite out of it to show what one day of traffic looks like, what 8 hours of helicopter traffic looks like in the Grand Canyon. And that photograph highlighted 363 helicopters. Each helicopter was one individual flight. I never took two pictures of one helicopter. I was very strategic about it. I went with three people. We had three counters to make sure we were accurate. And nobody spends that much time down there, so they don't see what the ramifications are of that amount of traffic.
An army of locusts descending on the Grand Canyon in the form of helicopters and motorized boat traffic on the river itself.
They're landing on the Hualapai Native American Reservation. Again, this is a question of should they have the ability to have economic viability? Sure. But what a question that I wanted to raise was, what is the right balance? So 10 years ago, there was no helicopter traffic in this four-mile section now called Helicopter Alley. And today, there is on average 300 to 400, sometimes 500 helicopter flights per day that land right next to the river.
The Hualapai Nation, their reservation directly abuts Western Grand Canyon. And I think this illustrates the complexity and the difficulty of wrapping one's head around some of these issues, because the Hualapai have been dealing with economic impoverishment for decades. They have very real and very huge problems. And a number of the tribe see this kind of tourism as a solution to those problems. And it's a legitimate argument and a legitimate point of view which needs to be recognized and treated with respect. But at the very same time, an equally significant section of the tribe feels that treating the land and the environment in this way is anathema to the traditions and the values of the tribe.
Of course, they're landing on Native American land, but they are basically flying on the border of a national park, which is supposed to be operated as wilderness area. And so it raises questions about quantity, volume, noise, and just a general balance of how we visit these places. A lot of people are now coming to visit Grand Canyon, where they fly from their hotel in the morning in Las Vegas and have 12 minutes with a bottle of champagne and get back in, and they're back to their hotel by brunch. And they've checked the Grand Canyon box, and they've seen it, which is great, but they've only seen a small part of it. They've never experienced some of its greatest views, but also its greatest assets, which I would argue is its silence.
We pay a lot of attention to the impact these kinds of developments have on the land itself. What we pay less attention to is how divisive and corrosive these kinds of developments can be on very small communities of Native Americans who are struggling with enormously difficult issues and who find themselves divided at the community, the neighborhood, and even the family level when you have wealthy developers come in and dangle the prospect of enrichment before their eyes in this manner and on a timetable which does not often enable them to kind of sift through these issues and weigh them carefully and make their own decisions about how they would like to proceed and what they feel would be the best sort of balance to achieve for themselves. So that's an aspect of these developments that I think Pete and I are trying to talk about right now, because it has not been given enough recognition and exposure.
Pete McBride and Kevin Fidarko will speak to a sold-out crowd at Pepke Auditorium tonight about their 800-mile hike through the Grand Canyon. We will link to the article on our website, where you can see McBride's time-lapse composite. Tune in Thursday at 4:30 for more from these interviews right here on KDNK. Increased government transparency is the aim of a new bill at the legislature. Senate Bill 40 would require taxpayer-funded agencies to provide digital, searchable files into the Colorado Open Records Act. Eric Galatis reports.
Colorado lawmakers are set to make it easier for watchdog groups to see how the sausage is made by local and state governments. Senate Bill 40 would update the Colorado Open Records Act, or CORA, making it possible to get digital copies of documents kept by any taxpayer-funded agency. Jeff Roberts with the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition says the move would finally bring CORA into the 21st century.
It's many, many years into the digital age. A lot of information that is very important to know about how taxpayer dollars are spent, how government decisions are made. Everything is really created and kept electronically these days.
Under the current rules, agencies are only required to release hard copy printouts. Roberts explains databases and other records are a lot easier to make sense of by using search functions and other tools to parse out large quantities of information. The measure would also limit agency liability by repealing criminal misdemeanor penalties for willful and knowing violations of CORA. Last year, a similar measure, also pushed by Senator John Kafalas of Larimer County, did not win approval. The defeat prompted Colorado's Secretary of State's office to create a working group to iron out sticking points, including concerns about the release of confidential information, such as Social Security numbers, embedded in databases. Robert says this year's bill stands a better chance of passing.
There should be a way to redact that and release the public portions in a format that allows the public or a journalist to analyze the information and look at how things are working or not working in some cases.
He adds his group's ultimate goal, shared by many in government, is to make all public records available as open data online. He says that would save custodians a lot of headaches producing documents and spreadsheets, and watchdog groups wouldn't always have to make formal requests. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
If the bill passes out of the Senate State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee and gets enough votes on the Senate floor, it will still need approval by the House before heading to the governor for his signature. And a Republican bill aimed at encouraging school districts to set training standards for concealed carry in school has passed in the Colorado Senate. But as Benta Berkland reports, Democrats rejected the bill, saying it would lead to more guns in schools.
Right now, Colorado bans firearms in K-12 schools, with exceptions for law enforcement and private security. Some school districts get around the ban by allowing teachers and other staff to work as private security. Senate Bill 5 would do away with that requirement and encourage uniform training standards for both staff and guards.
I am asking the question, how much training should be required of people who are armed in our schools?
That's Republican sponsor Senator Chris Hulbert of Parker. Democrats, including Senator Rhonda Fields from Aurora, opposed the bill.
Teachers should not have the burden of also acting as law enforcement.
The bill passed on a party line vote. It now heads to the Democratic-controlled House, where it will likely fail. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.